Welcome to another episode of So Mind-Boggling Journeys. I'm your host, Bettina Goolsbee. I'm an actor and dreamer slash creative continuing to go after my dreams. So much of this journey is just so mind-boggling, hence the title, for either reasons of utter disappointment or the manifestation beyond what I could have ever imagined. Follow along as I check in with other creatives along the way and learn what so mind-boggling things they have to say and what it's like pursuing the dream while living the in-between. I want to welcome you to So Mind-Boggling Journeys, Evie Bassey.
Thank you
so much for joining me. I'm so glad that we were able to make this happen.
Ooh, girl. It was a tech nightmare for 2 seconds there.
It was.
I am so tech naive. Oh, no. Mm-mm.
Girl, me too. It's coming out, you know, this Gen Z world. I'm just like, good Lord, am I going to make it? There's like...
Girl, I'm still on rotary phone, okay?
Wait, no. Are you really?
No, I'm not.
Oh, I was like, girl, those are still working?
No, I mean, I'm still like old school about everything, you know what yeah. I mean? All this tech stuff, I'm like, oh, it's amazing, but Jesus.
Sometimes, ain't it about? No, it is. It's like, it's a whole thing, you know? Uh-huh. So I'm glad that we worked that all out. Yeah. We're here on our video checks, our audio checks, lighting. So we are here. Hello.
Click, 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 click.
Yes. But thank you so much for joining me. This is exciting for me to have you here, Evie, because I feel like, and you don't know this, but so I feel like I've known you longer than you've known me. Now, mind you, now I feel like with all my guests, it's like because life is lifing. And the tagline for So Mind-Boggling Journeys is pursuing the dream while living the in-between. Mm. And there has been a lot of in-between. Like, there's a lot of the in-between, hence why I, you know, started this podcast.
Yeah.
Other reasons, which I'll go into more detail about later, but I haven't seen you in a while, but I feel like I knew you before you knew me, because when I first started acting, girl, and I would go to like film festivals and screenings, and I felt like you were in all of the short films, girl. Like, you were the queen of the short films. I was like, oh my God, you were everything, like that, okay?
Huh?
Girl, okay, let me just run down a few so you know which ones I'm talking about. Okay, freaking Booty Scratcher.
Yes, and Keanu is doing big things now.
Okay, well, let's come back and have you talk about that. Say Grace Before Drowning.
Yes.
Okay, Three Prayers for June.
Yes.
And I feel like this is when we then... met, because
yes.
Three Prayers for June, you did that with Ina Broud, and I was a part of the independent film school. And she was as well, and and that's how then
that was like with
Ella Thier. Okay, so that brings us to Tomorrow Ever After. Yes. Okay. Aisha's Story, Mother George. I was like, girl, she is like
You're taking me back.
Girl, right? I took you back.
Yeah. Mother of George was a feature. Tomorrow After feature. Yeah.
Right. Those were features. But the other ones were short films. You were at all the film festivals.
You out there working on it, let me tell you, short films are a good practicing ground. They are excellent. Good training ground for all of the parts that make movies, whether on the production end, on casting end, as an actor, that is the place. That is school in motion.
Not only that, but like all your creators and writers and directors, to your point, they're all like doing big things now. They're all like working, and like now they're working on features.
Yes,
for sure.
When Nikki Yato called me to be in her big film Nanny,
yes,
heartwarming, because sometimes when people do these short films, then they go on to do big things and they forget the small people that were around
that budget, and then they want to work with other name actors,
exactly.
And you're like, but I did your NYU film, girl,
right? Yes, so when she called, she was like, Evie, I couldn't do this film without you in it. Like, you were my first two short films before this feature. I couldn't do it without, calling you and seeing if you would like to come on. I was like, Sure. I was pleasantly surprised. I really was. I was like, okay, fantastic. And that film has gone on to be, wow. She's working on her second one now. So proud of her. I really am. She's just really major. And then the girl that was in Say Grace with me, has gone on to have her own, big movie, Ellie. Oh yeah, Ellie had a big splash as well with her feature,
Oh my God, yes, she is
Something
doing
Our
well.
Father.
I'm gonna tell you right now, because I'm
That's not
looking,
coming. I
hold
just know the
on.
word fa
Yes,
father.
our fa father, the devil.
Yes, Our Father the Devil. That went on to do
Yes.
a big splash there. She went from being an actor to being now she's directing and stuff. In our business, you have to learn how to pivot, man. You cannot, just think I'm only an actor. I'm only, you got to find other ways to be creative,
You do.
even if your main thing, your main creative joy, passion is not exactly maybe panning out how you want. Doesn't matter how to pivot. You have to be flexible in this business. Look at me. I mean, look, I can't be sitting here waiting for auditions all the time when I have other stuff I could do, and hence the book. So.
Okay. And we're going to get there in just a second, but I want to continue on this thread because I love what you said about as an actor, you realize that you kind of have to like expand your creative well and tank, right? But this is the thing. I feel like you have to be in the business for a while before you get that. I wonder if the new artists, actors know that. Because don't you feel like you had to be in the business for a while to realize, like, oh, this isn't a linear path. This isn't something where it's like, oh, I've been doing this now for like 7 years or 10 years. So this means now I'm automatically only going to be doing features or automatically only going to be doing network TV. Like it doesn't work like that. So how long were you in the business before you were like, oh, I need to maybe explore other avenues of this
Forever.
world? Yeah, because how long have you been acting?
So I graduated from William Esper Studio,
And
I believe.
studied with the Maggie
The
Flanagan.
Maggie Flanigan, that woman was boss. And let me tell you, not to say I'm, Viola Davis or something,
Girl,
but
you are
if you get out of
the
Maggie
next.
Flanigan class, you were learnt, honey. She did not just pass you through there. You went through changes with Maggie. I mean, that woman can sniff. Like she would, if you came in to do a scene in her class and you heard, she'd be like, go back out and come back in. You could not pass nonsense, coming in clay at acting. Oh no, that Maggie
Oh.
Flanigan School of Acting was rough. I got
Wow.
out of there in 2000. And so, yeah, I guess you could say. And then this book just happened last year. So, what, 23 years to get to that? Like you said, so mind-boggling, living the dream in the in-between. I may be getting it wrong, but I've always had a steady job. I've always had a 9-to-5, which has allowed me to have the flexibility. So I've been fortunate enough not to have the pressure. Don't get me wrong, I have pressure. When I audition for that thing, I want it because I'm thinking this is the one that's gonna get me away from the 9-to-5, right? So that hasn't happened quite yet. While I've enjoyed the experience of some really incredible work, but yeah, you kind of have to do various things, right? You'll drive yourself nuts if you go in and you always think that that one thing is going to be the one thing. And I think a lot of times, as young actors get into it, including myself, you get into it, you're always thinking that one is going to be the one. Man, you will drive yourself insane. You got to go in there. Put out your best product, and then you need to let it go. You need to walk away and let them pleasantly surprise you. And if it doesn't happen, you always have to remember that our game is a game of subjectivity, right? You could have been great at the audition. However, if you're 4'11" and the leading man is 6'4", I'm sorry, I don't care how good you are, you're not getting around. You're 4'11". on screen that looks crazy.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's a subjectivity. You could have been great, but let's say you walked in and you have perfume on, and that director's recently ex-wife wore the same perfume. You might not get the role because of that.
Right.
It's subjective. So yeah, it took me that long. I don't know if it took me that long necessarily to realize I pivot as much as the pivot happened to me based on my daughter, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a necessary, I guess, component to get me to pivot. But up until then, it's always been I had my 9-to-5 and then auditioning and then I, you know, doing voiceovers, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the pivot happens on you and sometimes you have to think, I need to pivot.
Yes.
Especially if all you're doing is the acting and doing like bartending, you know, the usual actor route, then yeah, you do need to pivot. You need to think outside of the box sometimes. Sometimes something else you're doing might be the thing that brings you to where you want to be, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, that might bring the attention to your craft, mm-hmm, you know? So it's all a game we're all trying to
listen. It really play. Is. It yeah. is. And it's a big puzzle, I feel like. And everybody's yeah. puzzle is different. And the
and
way
there's no one way of putting no. that puzzle together.
No, yeah. and the way the pieces fit together is so yeah. different for everyone. Yeah. Okay, so three things. I want to backtrack just like a little bit, right? And then we'll come back to where we are right now. So really quickly. So Nikki Attu, who you mentioned, you know, that is a dream of mine to work with her. And I am still nursing and licking my wounds from a short film that she did literally 20 years ago. That I did not book, and I was like, oh my gosh, like okay. I really wanted
Which
to
one?
Be okay. So wait, oh my gosh, what was the name of it? It was the one about the heist.
Vampire?
No. Oh, I mean that was a good one. Suicide by Sunlight.
Sunlight, yeah.
Okay, no.
Which is about to be a feature, I believe.
Wait, are you serious?
I think that's her next feature. Yeah, I think that's what her next feature is gonna be. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's her next feature she's working on right now.
Wow. And that is with Natalie. Oh my gosh. Remind me of her last name. That's the only thing about the podcast. Sometimes it's like I space out when I need to like recall names.
Yeah, which Natalie?
Natalie Paul. Natalie Paul was in was the lead in Suicide.
Okay.
Suicide by yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah. And Ellie, that's the one that Ellie was in.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
One thing about her I love is that she tends to try to keep her circle, you know, if she finds good people, she will keep them within her circle, you know, to work with. Yeah.
I love that. Oh, yeah. I do love that.
Because when you do that, you tend to work with people. There's a shorthand, like communication. Because if you've worked with, it's sort of like Scorsese and Leonardo. They don't got to talk too long. They've worked together so much so that they can read each other. You know, it's like husband and wife.
Yeah.
You get to where you're like, yeah, they raise an eyebrow. You're like, oh, I know what he just said.
Wait, no, I love that analogy. No, but Nikki Attu, this was, I swear, it was like an NYU. It might have been her first film, actually. I wonder. I'm so upset. I cannot remember the name of it. It was like one
her
word.
First feature?
No, it was a short film, and it was about three women who were like pickpocketers in the city, you know, but like for a reason or something. It was like these women.
I know African Booty Scratcher was her first.
That was the yes. That was the first.
Was her second.
Yes.
Whatever this is must have been like her third one.
No, no, no. I think it was before. No, this was before then, because I want to say African Booty Scratcher, that came out in when did that come out? That came out in 2007,
yeah.
And this is I like auditioned for this in like 2003 or something crazy,
oh,
2005.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
right. That
so
was
this was
before.
Not produced. Yeah, I don't think, you know, or maybe it was like one of her first student films that like she didn't submit to festivals. Mm-hmm. Maybe she did and it wasn't accepted. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but like if I ever work with her, you know, I will definitely find this out because I want to be like, girl, let's do it. Like I want to do it now. You know, I thought it was such a great film. So I just wanted to share that with you. And then the second thing, so Maggie Flanagan. So it's interesting. You said that you went to the William Esper Studio and studied under her in the year 2000.
Yeah.
So I went after she. I went to William Esper as well, but I went after she branched off and created
yeah,
her own
studio. Yeah, Maggie Flanagan Studio.
So I when I went to Esper, she wasn't there, but I studied under Deb Jackal and Karen Chamberlain, who were fabulous. They were fantastic. And then years later, when I was thinking about doing, Esper does like that that come back and do 1 year. What do they call it? It's like a
I don't know when I left, I left.
it's a grad year. It's a great, now, I mean, mind you now, I like Esper was great for what it was. I do have, a couple of issues with it, but that's another podcast.
I'm
But,
sure.
I feel like they could work things. I do think that they could work on, but
Yeah.
those teachers, the teachers that I had were great. But they have like this special year where it's like, oh, after you have been out in the industry and you've worked or auditioned, come back and you'll do like a, it's like a master year. It's like a
Okay,
master
yeah.
year. And
Polish you
so
up a little bit more.
you say that again?
Polish up a little
Yes,
bit more, yeah.
yes. And so I was like, oh, well, I maybe could do that with Esper, or let me look into Maggie Flanigan.
Maggie.
And so I auditioned with her, and she was a tough cookie in the audition. Like I was like, oh, this woman's no joke, And so I decided I went elsewhere. I think I actually didn't go directly but right back into the training, but I always said that I did want to go back to her.
Yeah.
So that's my.
She was amazing. She's an
I
amazing teacher.
hear, I
Amazing
hear,
teacher. Like when
yes.
she what when she, you know, all the people like she's always said she didn't like us actors. So I watched them when I watched them, the big stars, and
Yes.
she was, I don't like this one. Like, oh my God. And I watched them, I'm like, see why she
Not
said
Maggie
that.
giving shade.
Oh, mad shade. Mad
The mad
shade.
shade.
Oh yes. And she did not, well, first of all, she did not pull no punches, okay? None. None whatsoever. I
Oh
think
my
when
God.
you've lived as long as you as she has and you've seen as much, it's like,
Yeah, and she has.
why
She
should
has
I?
seen a lot. Yeah,
Oh
because she even
yeah.
worked at the William Esper Studio for so many years. So she saw a lot of people come through
I
there.
was actually very happy that she went and got her own stuff, you know? I thought she had the wherewithal, you know, as a teacher to build under her own name and not somebody else's. And I'm glad she did do that.
That's
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so then, we were talking about how you were doing, you were the short a film queen, okay, and then you did these features, and then you also did a TV series, web series with Tony Colomax, Date, Love, Repeat, and Tony was just on the
Oh
last episode, so I don't know if you saw that, but you got to check that out. Tony talks about
yeah,
working on Date, Love, Repeat, and
Tony.
so, girl, you have been working, okay? So, question for you. So, to bring it back to what you last just spoke about was the 9 to 5, right? How you knew that you needed to do that. So, did you ever have a period where you were pursuing acting full time and then you were like, oh, okay, I actually, this is great. I'm
Oh,
technically
girl.
working, but I need to get a 9 to 5 with this. Or did you always have the 9 to 5?
I always had a 9 to 5. Girl, I'm
Okay.
African. I'm Nigerian. I have a 9 to 5. My parents have put me out on the streets. Oh, God, no.
Well, I think that's
I'm African.
rare.
We don't do that.
Okay, but don't you think that's rare? Don't you feel like when you were first starting out, like everybody was trying to do the full-time acting thing?
I was that rare bird indeed, because in my class, in my acting class, I was the only one, I think, that had a 9 to 5. Everybody else was a bartender or a waitress or, you know, the usual
The usual actor job.
actor jobs. And I was the only one that was like, I can't be hanging out with y'all. I gotta get up and go to work. So no, I have never had a moment where I was not fully assured of a paycheck. I've always been that person that always had 9 to 5, and I was doing it even at the time when my job wasn't as flexible as it is now.
Okay, now how did you do that?
Well, you know, for instance, going to Esper Studio was in the evening, so I would just go. You know, this is before kids and a man in a house, and you know, I'm fancy foot free here out in the world, so I could do it. And whenever I'd had to go shoot something, you know, say Law and Order, which I've done several of those, they would be one off, like one day, 2 days. So I'll just take leave for that time, right? And then there was a time I went to Ghana to shoot ties with Ties That Bind with Kimberly Elise, and that was a 2-week shoot or so. So I just took my 2-week vacation.
Oh.
So I was always able to make that work for me, you know.
Girl, so you were always said to myself,
I
was
never. Yeah, I always said to myself, the only way that I would do acting full time is somebody gives me a contract and it's at least a 7-year something deal, guaranteed pay whether the show goes or doesn't go. Because no, I am one of those people. I'm nervous about my money. I got to pay my bills. I cannot. I've always been someone to take care of herself. Like I didn't have parents that, you know, were helping me like that. So I always had to be assured of my money. So that fly by your, the seat of your pants thing, you know, 10 roommates and sleeping on couches. I'm not about that life. No. I like a good cup of coffee. I like a good breakfast. I like to know my bills are paid. Mm-hmm. I am not that self-sacrificing actor. And sometimes in a business, people kind of make you feel like you're not so passionate because that you have something else. And I'm like,
say to you,
girl, save that for yourself and your bills. I need to have a paycheck. I need to know a check is coming.
Listen, sorry. That is what I was going to say to you, is that back in the day, because I remember specifically this one girl that I was taking an acting class with, she was talking about how she and her boyfriend didn't work other type of jobs because they were just so committed to the craft and so committed to acting. And I was, mind you now, she also, you know, her parents are very well off, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, see?
And I was like,
you can afford to do that, darling.
Right?
The rest of us do not have parents that could cut a check. I don't have safety nets, okay? I do not have safety nets. I've always been, I got to take care of myself. As soon as I was 18, I said, sayonara, and I never went back. And the reason why I've never gone back, because I take care of myself. And also, you know, I have an African upbringing, and that upbringing is you always have a job. This whole acting thing, nobody considers that. It's only of recent that acting, Nollywood, has become a big thing. But prior to 19, you know, like prior to when Nollywood take off in the 90s, right? Late 90s, 2000s. Prior to that, you said you want to be an actor as a woman. That was tantamount to you saying you're going to be a streetwalker.
Oh. Okay?
Nobody respected. It's all about school. You go to school, you get your degree, blah, blah, blah. Anybody that said you wanted to be an actor, you were a buffoon as far as they were concerned. Mm. Look, my dad was an excellent soccer player. Excellent. Born in the wrong country, under the wrong, like, if he had been born in Argentina or Brazil, you know, England or something, my father would have been a star soccer player. But he was Nigerian. And even though he had excellent skills, my grandma was like, If I catch you on a soccer field, I will beat the daylights out of you. School. It was all about that. So it didn't matter that he had such prowess, you know?
Yeah.
It's all about the school. So it's beat into my head. You always have a job. Yes. So whether you want to be an actor or whatever, what is your job at the end of the day?
Which is so interesting. So I felt really bad. This for the longest time, I felt so bad by that.
And, you felt like, I'm not passionate enough. I'm not comfy.
Right. And I even had those years of working as a full-time actor, and it was hard. It was so stressful. Hey. And so actually so much of my time was spent just focusing on getting a job. And I know I was going into those audition rooms like with desperation, like, Tony even talked about that, how, you know, before you get these other jobs or whatever, these, you know, life-sustaining jobs, you go in there and you're reeking of desperation because it's like everything rides
on this
one gig or this one opportunity in the moment, you know?
And I think people misunderstand that you're going to give it less because, well, after all, I'm getting a paycheck in 2 weeks. No, I would go in there being as hard on myself, you know, because I want to work as an actor. And me having a regular job does not make my commitment less, right?
Right.
So I go in there and just give it as much as somebody who their bills are riding on that, right? I go in there just as equally as committed and as passionate and as eager to get that role as much as anybody else, yes. You know? But so, yeah, there was a time when I was in a business, people would be all, oh, you have like a job, like it was a dirty thing.
Oh my, it was
yes, like, I do. Yes, I do.
Looking back on it and just how we are now today and how so many actors, especially with the strike that happened and the pandemic, you know, so many actors are like, oh my gosh, like I actually need to be doing other things.
Exactly.
Streams of income. And like we were saying earlier, branching out into like directing, writing, producing, all of that or other
voiceover artists. And
So based on your background, and let's get clear on something, right? So you're Nigerian, but you weren't born in Nigeria. You were born in the boogie down Bronx.
I was. My mom's American. My mom is Caribbean and from Virginia. Her father's from Virginia. And then her mom is from Antigua. So my mom's from half South, half Caribbean. My father's 100% Nigerian. So yeah.
You didn't have many a job. You have jobs on jobs on jobs. Really.
Listen, yeah.
So what really fueled your acting? Do you know what I mean? Because with that background on both sides of your families of like of acting not being a real job, what made you look at acting as like it could be a potential job, you know, once you book that gig?
Funnily enough, the same grandmother who whooped the black tar off my dad for playing soccer was very much into performance. So whenever there would be church functions and I would, you know, have to sing or be part of a play at church, oh my gosh, she was Maggie Flanagan. You had to perform it in front of her because, number one, you was not dragging her name in the mud, okay? If you were going out there and they were saying you're her kid, you needed to be out there performing to your most excellent. So she would have you out there singing a song. And if you weren't emoting well, what are you doing? So I think because she put me in all these stuff at church, you know, singing solos, acting in play, it developed that in me. And I was always that kid that had imagination. Everything was so imaginative for me. My imagination was always out there. When I grew up, my grandmother raised me. And so it was just me and her. I have no other kids to play with. So I created my whole fantasy world by myself. Mm-hmm. I was very, very creative. You know, if I wanted to play dress up, we have this milk called pink milk. And I would get the two little cans. I would put a string under it, put my heel on top of the can, and then I would wrap it around. That was my high heel. I would walk around with it just like that. Yes. We had this fruit called udara. And I don't know the English name for it, but the pit of it, when you split it into what had gummies, like a sticky surface, and I would, you know, put them there and I would string flowers around my neck. And that was my dress up. Like I would create every sort of thing. I'd be teacher to invisible kids. I would be reading the news. At one time I thought I was going to be a broadcaster. So I had always been role playing because I didn't have kids my age to play with.
That imagination also.
Yeah, and subsequently also, I always felt more comfortable having discussions with people older than myself. I would rather talk to a 60, 70, 80, 90-year-old than somebody my age in the 40s and the 50s, right? Because of that also. So my joy for acting and all that, I think, came from all those years of me spending time by myself. I did a lot of reading because there was tons of novels in the house. So I was an avid reader. So my imagination, I could picture everything. So even till now, when I read a book, I see who plays what, the characters. It's almost as if when I pick up a book, it goes up on a wall. And it's like a movie in my head. So, I've always had that, and my grandmother fostered it with, you know, all the times I had to perform and things. But I have to say that when I came to this country then to go to school, to go to college, my dad, it was the schoolwork, right? It was when I started dating Rocky Hudson, who's Ernest Hudson's son.
From Winston, Ghost.
From, yeah.
Ghostbusters,
Oz. Yeah. So when I started dating him, he's the one that actually got me to go to ESPA.
And
Yeah. Because, you know, I was graduating from school, doing my regular job. We started dating, and he's Mr. Artsy Fartsy Bohemian, you know. I'm teaching myself guitar. He was, he's a filmmaker himself. So he always wondered about people, I guess, because he grew up in an artsy fartsy, you know, his dad is an actor and his brother was also in directing and acting. So for him, he was just very curious to know how people end up with just working regular jobs, because it's not something he can imagine for himself. So one day we were having a conversation and he goes, did you always like just want to do this job you're doing? And I said, you know, quite frankly, if I could have it my way, I would want to be an actor. And he goes, well, why are you whispering the shit? Just why aren't you doing it?
Right.
Like, just do it. So he took me to to ESPA to sign up for the summer program. So I signed up for the summer program with Maggie, and you have to be invited to come back. Mm-hmm. And she invited me to come back for the 1 year. And then I finished the first year. And of course, you have to be invited back. And then she invited me back for the second year. And so, yeah, and here I am.
Oh, I love it.
I didn't keep the man, but I kept the passion.
But that,
I don't see glistening.
Look, and I was about to go into something else. And I was like, ooh, actually, let me just stop for a quick second.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes I like to include these moments, you know.
Oh, listen, because it's a conversation.
It is a conversation. Yeah, but I might take this out only because I really did just pat my thing down.
Yeah. Right? That's the one thing I used to love about Wendy Williams. She'd be going under her wig, get the little note. She'd go on her breast. I love those. I miss her. Oh, gosh, I miss her so much. I really do. You would think she was my family, how much I miss her, honestly.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, let me tell you something really quickly. So you up here talking about you love and miss Wendy Williams, okay? Let me just tell you something. You know, every now and then I hop up on the Facebook, okay? And girl, you be going in on people. I'm like, you're the new Wendy Williams, okay? But with you being an artist, I'm like, you better be careful, Chad, because you know they come after you after you're like, when you make it. I'm like, girl, people gonna come after you.
I am a Sag. No, if you don't want to know, don't you ask me. I'm direct, but not disrespectful. I'ma let you know.
But you are harsh. I'm like, ooh, EP be like, why did I get mad? Oh, that person can't act. He is not playing around. You could do like a little YouTube.
To my husband, I went to see Moulin Rouge. I came out of there. I was like, now, boy George, I love you, baby. But no, sir.
Oh, God.
No, sir. Nuh-uh. Mm-mm. No. Mm-mm. I know they had you up there because you are boy George. You ain't up there because of the acting skill. They trying to get us with the 80s nostalgia to come in here and spend some money. And I'm glad to do it. But for the love of Jesus, no.
Why'd you come in for boy George?
No. Trust me, Bettina, when you see the show, he is sleepwalking through that show.
Not sleepwalking.
He owned it in.
I'm glad the podcast is getting this, because the podcast, the listeners might have been like, oh, what's Bettina talking about? Hello, this is what I'm talking about.
Listeners, he phoned in from England for that role right there. Now, I know Viola Davis, okay? But for the love of God, I know good acting when I see one. And I know bad acting in myself when I'm doing it.
Oh, my God.
I was like, sir. We need the moments to be different. You cannot be having the same reaction in every single moment. Where are the stakes? What are you? Why are you in this scene? What is your objective in this scene? What do you hope to accomplish? And why are you making this speech at this time to this person? And who is this person to you?
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, let me tell you. So we all know we're going to send positive energy and positive vibrations to Wendy Williams, you know, because she's going through her thing right now.
I love her. I miss her so much. I'm not saying she wasn't messy. I totally disagreed with people saying that she deserves this because she talked about people and all of that. That was literally the definition of her job. Now, did she go, you know, sometimes off the end and feeling herself and going too far? Yes. But no one short of a serial murderer deserved to go through what she's going through and then be told that they deserve it. The people saying this are the same people who probably were listening in and kikiing. You know, it's sad to see someone who was so sharp, so witty, so who prized intelligence, who prized, you know, herself on what she did, just be what she is now. The fact that when I saw her on that TV without her wig and her face beat, and she came, you know, Black China talking about something else. She all the way on the other side talking about something else. I was like, who put her on it? Because if that was my sister, my auntie, we not doing this documentary. She going to appear on, I don't care if she's talking nonsense, but we are going to see her how she always was, full face beat to capacity, wig set right, them boobies sitting tight. Don't do this to her like that. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody deserves to lose their memories, to lose their train of thought, just all willy-nilly. Karma, if it's about karma, all of us got karma because we've all done something, said something that we shouldn't have. So let's not call on karma. Right. Now, when somebody's down, it's not the time to kick them. Mm-hmm. I don't say you paint them a saint, but if you ain't got nothing nice to say, do not comment on the situation. Because God is also looking at you, putting that bad energy on her, talking about she deserve it. Then God might go back and pull out his notebook and say, now let me go in here and see what you've been doing yourself.
Well, all I'm saying is that you could have your own little Wendy Williams-esque YouTube channel, okay? Or you could be an acting teacher.
Let me say this. I say this. Let me cover myself on this one. It makes sense. He's not an actor. He's not. He's a singer. He's a singer that was called in to take on the role because he will put butts in seats. He's not a trained
actor. Not only
actor.
That. So not
let
only
me just say that, please.
But we
people,
also
put me on the cross next to Jesus.
Wait, what'd you say about Jesus?
I said, I don't want him to put me on a cross next to Jesus.
Right. So you know that's coming.
When he ascended, right?
You're going up on the cross.
He ascended.
The Flourish fans is going to be on the cross. Put you on the cross with that one. You about to get nailed, okay? but what I will say about that is, to your point, I get it, right? Especially being in the business for so long, you get it. Like, these productions are so expensive. You want to fill the seats.
Yes.
Right? And I think there's something, and being an artist, right? It's like when you finally do make it, it's so hard to make it in this business, right? Because, yeah. I mean, I'm hoping, I'm looking forward to this. And, you know, I'm sure you are too, right? It's like once you, and I hate that term make it because I technically think we're making it now because we are doing the thing that we want to be doing.
And also in laws of attraction, you cannot say, you know, you have to picture the thing, see it, live it like you actually have it.
Uh-huh.
So we have made it.
We
because
have
there are people who
it.
Dream about things and talk
and
about it
anything.
And they never do it. We've actually put ourselves on the line, and whether we've attained the gloried status of being Academy Award winners or rolling in their circle or SAG Award, all the awards and all of that, the fact is that we both had dreams and we actively put ourselves in motion to make it happen. There are levels to that. There's the folks that are, you know, and then there are the journeymen, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But compared to someone who's sitting and talking, yes, I consider myself to have made it. Because guess what?
You
talking, I'm doing.
You're doing, absolutely. And, oh my gosh, wait, I just lost my train of thought. I had something. Oh, as we were saying earlier, I was telling you one of the reasons why I created the podcast. This is another reason why I created the podcast, because I hate that idea that like you've only made it and you're only successful once you're like on Netflix or once you're at the Oscars, you know, where it's like, no. You know, all those people that we see and we exalt and we're like, oh my God, they like made it, and we're so inspired by this.
Where did it come from? Oh, honey, they have been around.
They've been there. And it's like
the spotlight has finally pivoted to them. I mean, look at someone like
and you can't shun these years.
Lupita was on a web series called Sugar on YouTube before she got 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, hey, who's she? No, she was just not doing the stuff you saw.
Right.
Now you just see her because the spotlight is brighter and bigger. But it doesn't mean these people weren't always away grinding. Look at Issa Rae, forever the awkward girl on Facebook or YouTube.
She was doing promotions on Facebook, right?
Yes.
And like in people's groups.
Yes. And then it became the show, what was her show called? It's Insecure. Yeah. So she didn't come out of nowhere.
No. What do they say? They say that like all your favorite stars are like, they had like 10 to 20 years of like, what is it? They were overnight success for like 10 to 20 years.
Nobody's not on no overnight success.
No.
Their success took time. And finally it happened. It clicked. Yes.
And to your point, it's like you can't just jump to 12 Years a Slave without doing Sugar. You can't just jump to Insecure without doing the Missing
the awkward black girl,
right? Yeah. And so it's like, you know, so the podcast aims to highlight those moments, because it's like, well, why do we then care about the journey after they've achieved a certain level, right? It's like, no, I think that like all those short films that you worked on and those early features and the web series, you know, I think that that's interesting now, you know, I want to hear about all that right now. And so that's
all
another
reason. All the
problems
that make up, keep the wheel going are all as important. Yeah,
exactly.
All the ones, the little rocks at the bottom that's holding up the mansion, they don't count less. It's not the steeple. The steeple is not, you know, the steeple is up because of the little stones that is holding, that were poured into the foundation that holds it.
Absolutely.
Now you see the steeple, but you don't see them little rocks down there in the foundation that's holding it, that's holding the whole frame together.
Right. Yes.
If that analogy makes sense.
No, it does. So I do hope that is what the podcast serves, is like I want to introduce artists to people that they might not know who are amazing artists, you know? Okay, so going back to you saying that you had lost that one man, okay, but then you gained another man, okay, and not only that, but I guess he's not a new man now, because how long have you been married now?
We got married in 2010. Yeah, we met in 2009. Yeah, so 15 years altogether. 14 married, yeah.
Wow. And you have
time flies.
You say that again?
I said time flies.
Time, oh my God, it does fly. And now you have this beautiful daughter.
Yeah.
Wait, I love this 45 minutes of the podcast, and now we're getting to Anoushka.
Yes, that's right.
Of Anoushka's Extraordinary Heroes, which is a book that you wrote about her and her experience and your whole idea about this. So Anoushka has Down syndrome, and you wrote this book to illuminate children who are born with these. And I love how you say that. You say not necessarily disabilities, but with different extraordinary abilities. I love that.
Yes.
And you want to illuminate
them extraordinary.
Yes. Yes. And change the stigma around
The narrative around it. Yes. Because for me, Anoushka was diagnosed with Down syndrome. Oh, she's thumping up there. Lordy, Lord, she's about to come down and descend upon us right as we begin to talk about her.
Which is great. You know,
I can hear her.
Have her, the namesake, come down.
So, she was diagnosed with Down syndrome in utero, and the way they tell it to you, the way it's put forth to you is always with such darkness, you know, and you go online, everything is the negative of it. Everything, they speak about all the impossibilities and rarely of the possibilities. So all you hear is what they're not doing. For instance, I had a what they call a parent planning team meeting yesterday. Before that, I'm reading the reports and it's so high, sweetheart. Hi. Here she comes. Are you awake now? Do you want to say hi?
Yeah.
Come on, say hi, and then you got to go sit down, okay? Tell the book.
Hello, with her messy hair. Anushka?
She usually looks better than this.
Anushka's like, listen, I just woke up, okay?
Can you say hi?
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Anushka.
Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. She's got a little bit of a cold and, you know, she's not feeling too hot. All right.
Anushka, it's so nice to meet you.
You say nice to meet you.
I play Moose Clump.
You want to play Moose Clump?
Yeah.
Okay. We cannot play. Okay. Do you want to play Moose Clump here? Yeah. Okay. All right. Mommy duty. Let's. Yeah,
Anushka,
and I'm going to be that mom.
Don't use the phone
just so I could do this. Yes, I'm that mother. If I need to get something done, she going to get the phone.
She going to get a device. Yes.
She going to get the device.
She going to get that screen time.
Praise Jesus for the device. Don't let the device raise your children. But if you got stuff to do, honey, sometimes you just going to have to collapse. Come. Come get it. Because if not, we're not going to get nothing done.
Oh, something my gosh.
You want to lie down? Okay. All right. So. Everything is about negative. And like I say, when I got that report and all I was so upset because on black and white, it's so cold. It's so devaluing, demeaning, dismissive, all of that stuff. And then when I spoke to them and I got context, it made me feel a lot better because they were highlighting what was great about her. But that wasn't really so present in report, right? So this is, you know, life with a child like Anushka is about sometimes needing to battle those narratives, needing to set things straight, because people will come at you sometimes with pandering or being patronizing, you know, and they will, you know, either talk to her or look at her or stare. You would think that we're far removed from a time where a child like Anushka would have been sent to a home. We're not. My husband's cousin said to me that my daughter would bag groceries. We were both talking about our children. Her child, my child. Her child's a year and a half younger. They're sitting, they were playing together. My daughter's playing in a cognitively sound level with hers, right? My daughter knows how to count 1 to 30. She knows colors. She knows shapes just like her daughter. Everything her daughter knows, mine knows. She asks me, she goes, so, turn your tablet on, boo-boo.
And there's nothing wrong with bagging groceries, but obviously they were seeing this in a way where they were creating a ceiling or creating a limit.
She would have never said that to a mother with an average child expressing that. As I was, that Anushka is sassy. And I was like, she needs to get paid for this sass and get her own place because me and her sass can't live in the same house, like jokingly, you know? And I said, you know, she's doing great, blah, blah, blah. I said, my goal is for her to, okay, ma'am, that is a little loud. Let me turn that down. Can you hear it?
I can hear it, but it's okay. It's not, it's.
Yeah, I'm turning that down.
I'm listening and I'm like, is that distracting? And I'm like, it's not because you and I are having the conversation, but I'm like, maybe it would be for a listener. And I also have like one earbud in too, so yeah. There's that too.
Has it turned the sound? Is the sound high? You know, you ask me how my daughter is doing, and I'm telling you, she's great, and that my hope for her is to get her own place, right? And the next thing I said, my hope for her is to get a job and get her own place. And the next thing you say to me is, yeah, and she leaned in, like it's like she's telling me something, you know? Mm. She leaned in and she goes, yeah, Chicken at groceries. Now, you share blood with this child. This is your, you're her father's first cousin, thus you're her second cousin.
Not you airing the family out on the podcast. Yes, I don't want you to have no smoke, Evie.
You over here talking about she. So if I have to fight you as a family member, if I have to challenge your mindset and you're in the family, Lord, what I'm supposed to do with the person out there in the streets?
Right. Oof.
You know, people feel like they can just say, okay, I know that. People think they could just sometimes say whatever they feel like. She, if I had an neurotypical child and I said, I can always for her to get her own job and get her own place, I can guarantee you she will bag groceries would not be what would come out of her mouth. She said that because her ignorance will not allow her to see that someone with Down syndrome could actually attain something above that station. Now, yes, no, nothing wrong with bagging groceries, but never in the history of career days in any school did somebody go up there and say, I want to bag groceries for a living. People fall into a job like that. People choose that kind of job. Maybe after they retire, I want to get out of my house. I don't want to be home. They may choose that. Some people fall into it because, okay, they got backgrounds that don't allow them to get certain things. So they got to start somewhere and build the confidence of the society, of themselves, to get to where they eventually will end up, which is hopefully positive, right? So this book was necessary because I needed to present people with Down syndrome as more than, oh, she's always smiling, she's always happy. I want to present them also as people who could motivate people, leaders, achievers, not just, oh, she's always so loving. Oh, she always gives hugs, as these caricatures. These are human beings. And the 22 people in my book have accomplished things that average people could spend their lifetime and never accomplish. Karen Gaffney, who's the first person in my book, has done 16 open water swims. She swam the English Channel as a six-person relay. She swam across the Boston Harbor. That's 5 miles, open water. And she raises money with that for her foundation. She has an honorary doctorate degree. She has been on a TED Talk, not TEDx, actual legit TED Talk.
Okay. Everybody who's done a TEDx.
I'm not saying it's talk, not.
So mind-boggling journey. Does not condone.
I'm not saying TED, but there is TED Talk and then there's TEDx. I hate when people try to think like this. It's not a bad thing. Okay? You have a bachelor's and you have a master's. Is one bad worse than the other? No. There's a master's, bachelor's, PhD. Someone who doesn't got a has a bachelor's is not like they're lesser than somebody has a PhD. There are varying degrees of things. And when you mention people, no, I'm not saying one is, what I'm saying is that this woman has Down syndrome and she went on a TED Talk and was able to compose herself and speak with eloquence and express her ideas just as clearly and succinctly as someone who will be, who's neurotypical, right?
Well, okay, so Evie, let me say something. So, you know, I not to play devil's advocate, you know, an apologist, you know, for your family member, but I feel like because we don't hear about these stories, and I love that you highlight these people in your animated, illustrated book, Book of Illustrations.
And let's pick the animation into life. Yes, yes, yes. Cartoon character with a new child. Yes. The Holy Spirit just touched you right there. Boom. We're going to do it.
Absolutely. Exactly. But we needed you to put this out into the world to show us, because you even said yourself that, you know, when they told you this, right, then, you know, when they told you what Anushka, how Anushka was going to be brought into the world, you were like, well, wait, let me do some research, you know? And so it was because of the circumstance you did the research. If you're not in that circumstance, you might not know, because you have no reason to kind of do the research. So yeah. we're thankful to you, because you are illuminating what the possibilities are, and you're getting us all to look at this completely differently. You know, like this is so enlightening to me, because I'm like, ooh, what prejudices did I have that I might not have thought about, you know, because this isn't my circumstance.
And I'll have to say, let me say this. When I got the diagnosis, I'm not saying I leaped for joy, you know, about it. I was devastated. I went through a process of being very, very depressed. And then I found a show called Born This Way, and that shone a light at the end of the tunnel for me and let me see the possibilities. And that show was the first time a reality show actually made a big difference in somebody's life, because there were 8 young adults with Down syndrome that they followed, showing how they lived their lives. They owned businesses. They lived alone. They worked for someone. They graduated college, high school, you know, so that let me see the possibilities. Now, if we had more shows, when was the last time we actually had a television show that had someone with Down syndrome as a full-fledged cast member, right? Corky from Life Goes On. Now, not to say there haven't been movies on Netflix and like Champions and all of that, that does that. But name one television show, maybe I'm missing it, that has had someone. Representation matters. Mm-hmm. It really does.
All representation.
As we were African Americans for the longest time, we were relegated to playing certain things or not even in any shows at all in the 20s, 30s, 40s, you know. And so now, even now, we're still fighting for prominence and fighting to not play stereotypical roles. You know what I mean? So the same thing applies to disabled people. Why can't the best friend in a show be blind without the show being about being blind?
Right.
They're just blind. That's just it. No need to go into storylines, blah, blah, blah. You know, right. We always want to make a disability a thing. They're disabled people, differently abled people, people who are hearing impaired and all this. They just live their lives. And the impairment is not a thing, you know? So representation matters. So for me, I would read stories to my daughter and there was no representation. Just like when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, I had Snow White and all these different things. But I needed stories of people that look like me. So I'm reading to my daughter Little Leaders, which is a great book that highlights like Phyllis Wheatley and Oprah and, you know, various people, Zora Neale Hurston, blah, blah, and it's great. As a Black woman, she should know these people. Then I was reading another book called Iconic Women A to Z, and it ran through like Amelia Earhart, Beyoncé, and so on and so forth. So when I read those books, two things came to mind, right? And that came together, give me this idea. One, I was on a Down syndrome group and a girl that was pregnant was asking, is there a book with people with Down syndrome who have achieved anything? Because my family are forcing me to have an abortion. They say, I'm not going to have a life. I'm not going to travel. I'm not going to keep a job. I'm not going to have daycare, that my life is ruined. I want to show them that I want to have this baby and that this baby can accomplish something, but I need proof, right? That had just went in my head and to the back. Then I'm reading this iconic, you know, and I'm looking, I'm like, none of these people look like Anushka. And one day I'm in the shower and boom, me reading all these books to her and not seeing representation. And then that girl's, you know, question at the time crashed in my head. I'm like, hey, why isn't there a book? They're little leaders that neurotypical kids can look to, right? Why aren't there leaders that my daughter could look into that are from her community that she can actually have something in common with, which is that they've accomplished things in spite of what society has said about them, in spite of the physical things that happen you know, to them, in spite of the maybe intellectual, you know, delay and all, but they've managed to become, you know, to walk the red carpet, to receive an Academy Award, to be an open water swimmer, to be an alpine skier who works for a senator who also works at a daycare. Like, some of these people got 2 and 3 jobs, and they're average people here who can't keep one job. They still on their parents' couch. This book highlights these amazing individual models, business owner. Someone like Colette DeVito runs. She has, I know you're hungry, hungry. I'll be right here, baby. You ate so much today. You're not going to starve. Love you.
I was about to say, now listen, you're not going to have to start on the mind-boggling journey show, okay?
Yeah. She's like, look here, lady. Okay, what you doing? I need to eat. But Colette DeVito, her Coletti cookies, her business is worth $1.7 million. I don't have that in my bank account, and I got all the, you know. She is running a business. She is on YouTube. Listen to her speak very articulately. She trains her employees, and she only hires people with that are differently abled because she couldn't get a job, even though she could do it. People, the one thing I say about Down syndrome that I absolutely detest, or it drives me nuts, is the face, that one could see it, because it allows people to just casually dismiss a person because they assume, oh, I got Down syndrome, must not be able to do anything. Meanwhile, she's running her business. She's training her employees. And she had to create that opportunity for others like herself because her parents had to create that opportunity for her. Right now, as I speak, my daughter's 5 years old. I'm already thinking in my head what I will have to create in order to give her employment, because people out here are not trying to hire. You know, they're what they call that. They talk. There's a word I'm looking for that has to be lip service. They pay lip service. You know, they make the little donation. Da 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 da. But you know, that's nice that you may donate to causes. But if you have a business, how you can help in society, how you can help these causes that you cut a check to, National Down Syndrome Society, Global Down Syndrome Foundation, or, you know, and things like that, is by also making room to employ people like my daughter, right? Because what it is the government will pay, you know, their resources for them when they're in school, up until high school. Once they graduate, it's like, you on your own, Bob. And then you have to now think as a parent, what do I do with my kid now? Where are the training programs? This is why I went to Rocky Hill. I'm in Connecticut. Rocky Hill, Connecticut school district, I give them mad props because they created the DREAM program, which trains young adults, 21, 22, in food service industry work. Then they created a cafe called the DREAM Cafe that employs them. And most of them, they have 2 jobs. They work like Costco, or, you know, and things like that. And then they come there in the morning and serve coffee and tea and, you know, and things like that. So the community at large, you know, we need to work together. You know, if you have a small business, what is it for you to hire, you know, and train them? They people with Down syndrome, you can train them just like you could train any other employee. You show them what they need to do and it's done. And you will never find a more dedicated worker, okay, than someone with Down syndrome. So, I say that. In conclusion, the book was my way of highlighting people in our society that get ignored, and they have more in them to offer society, if only society would choose to see possibilities in these young adults, in these children like mine, and give them an opportunity to show what they can do and guide them in life rather than relegate them to the back of the room all the time.
I know, and I know that you did an interview. You said that it's like putting like the Patrick Swayze ghosts, putting them in the corner.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long ago that this was happening. One of the ladies in my book, Judy Scott, she was a twin, and she had Down syndrome, the other one didn't. And then the parents were told that the sister, Judith, would not be able to learn anything, right? That she was, they used the word uneducable, right? And then the parents took her at night and put her in a home. Twin woke up, twin is gone. Fast forward years later, she goes and looks for her twin, finds her. They do a total checkup. It's not that she couldn't learn. She had a hearing impairment. She could not hear.
Oh my God.
If they had taken the time to do the work to check, you know, they would have found that it's not that she couldn't learn. She couldn't hear. She could not hear. You can't hear. You can't speak.
So it's like an automatic write-off.
Yeah. So she, yeah. So they, she takes her sister. Then she finds a program where her sister could do some work. And now her sister is one of the top selling folklore artists.
Mm.
4 documentaries, 2 books. Her art is all over the world. Wow. Someone who went from uneducable, now her legacy is keeping her family. All those art pieces all over the world.
Ooh.
All the books and things, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we should err on the side of caution when we meet people. When we meet anybody, not just people with disabilities, don't write people off. You don't know what's inside someone. Instead, how about you water that seed in them? How about, first of all, look to see what are they able to do, and then get behind them and try to you know, make them a very living, breathing part of society. Nobody in this society at all should be disposable.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you, so how do you handle the educators and childcare? Like, how does that work?
Well, number one, I set a tone. I set a tone that you can mess with anybody else up in here, but that girl there, no. No, ma'am. Have you met me? Mm. So I set a tone. I'm respectful. I educate myself. I try to come in. I'm pleasant, but you always have to set a tone, because if you don't present your child as precious, people are going to want to treat them as though they're not.
Yeah.
So I set that tone. When I come in, I let them know we're a team. Whatever you need from me, let me know, and I will work with you. And ever since Anushka came into this world, whatever the PT, OT speech person did, I replicate. And whenever I meet a new team of teachers and providers, I let them know I really do appreciate you guys, because with you and me, we're going to take her to the top of the top of whatever that is for her, right? So, you know, I don't ever want to be that mom. Until you make me that mom. But I've not had that circumstance, because I come in with the attitude of me and you, we're a team. And our job as a team is to get Anushka to reach her optimal, right, capacity. Mm-hmm. So that's how I work with everyone, providers, service providers, teachers, you know. And if I find something that makes me not very comfortable, I address it respectfully. And I think it's all in the attitude that you come in. I come in with an attitude of, I want to cooperate with you. You know, let's work together to make this, you know. Yeah, the only person that I've ever met that downplayed my daughter was her cousin.
Mm. It'd be the one that it's family. It's always family.
Everybody else thinks my daughter is a rock star. Like, even when I was in my down place and not and just depressed and only seeing negative and always, you know, just I was in such a dark place. I had friends that were like, girl, you have a rock star here. You have a super, look at this child. She's got a light. Now, you just need to get up from under that blanket and you can see it. And it took me a while to get to where I wasn't so focused on all that she, you know, because I was impressed with all she couldn't do. So what else? I'm already, you know, going crazy with the hormones, you know, and then just having such bad news all the time being shoved at me. I'm absorbing all this negative energy, and all I could think of was everything my child wasn't gonna do. And oh my God, I'm gonna be a forever parent. This child is never gonna have an old place. I'm never gonna retire. I'm never, you know, all this. These things. Why did you do this? 43. Did you need to have a child? Oh, good God. I got put myself through the ringer, and my faith was knocked back, because when they told me she was going to have Down syndrome, I said, not my Jesus. As much tithing and going to church, I'm in the choir, I'm doing this. My faith is strong. I've always been a born again. Since I was 13 years old, I gave my life to Christ, and he's put me through the ringer, and I've kept my faith through everything he's given me, but he ain't going to put this one here on top of everything else I've been done gone through, right? Oh, I rebuked. I rebuked it in the name of Jesus. I rebuked everything. And so when that doctor sauntered in very casually, didn't even hold my hand, didn't even come close, she stood over there and looked at me sitting over here with all the drips and the scars from the oncoming love and the C-section, and telling me, oh, do you know your daughter has Down syndrome? I said, yes, I do. And that's when I realized, I said, oh, so Jesus surely did do it to me, didn't he?
Mm.
And it knocked my faith back. And my faith is, it's building up, but I have a distrust. Right? Because I felt like I got betrayed. I felt like it took me such a long time to get pregnant. I went through 6 years of trying, 3 IU, whatever IUIs, and then 2 in vitros. And then, you know, it was Anushka. And then the reward was not what I thought I was going to get. I had this whole idea of what I was going to do. I thought, and blah, 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 blah. We're doing that. We're just with extra chromosomes. We still rock it. We still doing it. She's still that child.
Yeah.
A mom. And she will remain so. I tell people all the time, somebody did ask me that. Oh, again, a family member said to me, are you going to fight everybody that has something to say about Anushka? Have we met? Absolutely.
And you're like, and starting with you.
You're right. I said, Anushka has a legion behind her. Who's the legion? She don't need nobody else. She don't need nobody else but me. Yes, I fight all of y'all. I fight all of y'all in white. To raise the under bamboo earring. Like we say in Nigeria, we go wear one trouser leg for village square. Me and you, one pant leg. You want to fight? That, yes.
Ooh. Like,
why would you ask me that? If she were average, would you ask me that? That, so if somebody, you know, were to throw the R word at her or something, or push her just for the fun of it. So it's almost as if it's like you have to give pass to somebody maybe mistreating her, saying whatever, shooting off at the mouth, because, well, you know, no. Average or not, nobody should be speaking on nobody's child. No, it's not acceptable. It's most especially not acceptable if it's somebody's child that has already got stuff on top of them. Now you want to come at your nonsense on top of that? I will knock it off in you.
Mm. Ooh, all the smoke.
All the smoke. I wasn't the one to mess with before I had a kid. I'm definitely not the one to mess with now. I got a kid because now I got a reason to fight. Before, I just had my other stuff I'm fighting. But now I got my daughter. She's my reason. Yes, boo-boo. I know.
Feel like you and I talk about fighting, and I'm trying to get some crackers.
Yeah, I will.
She wants some
over there. She's don't like it.
Get some apples out here.
She don't like it. That's what it is. Hold on a second. I'm gonna give her favorite. Plantains are her favorite. Yeah. Yes, you're gonna have rice. Yep. She's like, can I have some rice? Yes, rice with the love of fried plantain. But so she gave me purpose. Not that I was purposeless before, but a deeper purpose, a deeper appreciation. I tell you, God knew why he gave me this check. Because one, I'm the most impatient person in the world. I'll be online and people take too long with their Starbucks. Or I'm like, look, can you just cut the five other things and just get a coffee? Let's go.
Yeah.
Enough with the latte with the 2 foam, 3 foam, sprinkle of this and that. Child, pump this and don't pump that. Get the hell out the way, man. And now I have a child that forces me to look deeper, to be, you know, if I thought I was compassionate before, now I have to be extra compassionate because I get impatient sometimes because some of the things she, I'm like, oh, you five, how you don't know? You know, I had to slow down. I had to be more compassionate. And the empathy has to have a real meaning to it because, you know, she has challenges. She does. Nobody says she does, you know, but it's the taking. I had to slow down, take my time, be more patient, more empathetic, or more compassionate, you know, and the love goes on a very, you know, like a deeper level and the respect, because I tell you something, my daughter is so resilient. People with Down syndrome are one of the most resilient people you want to meet. Now, in my book, on the back of it, are various symbols, right? So I have the diamond, I have the NLS on the superhero, and as a matter of fact, I should grab a book.
Yes! Oh my God!
I am talking about
yes.
So many symbolisms on this book, right? So the front, obviously, that's Anushka. That's James. He won my chippy nails. It's called Shabby Chic, folks. He won an Academy Award. That's James Martin. This is Isabel Tejada Springwall.
Wow.
And at 19, she had a full fashion showcase at the London Fashion Week.
Wow.
Right? At 19. She's from Guatemala.
Mm.
And that's Emmanuel Bishop. He was sight reading French at 3. Wow. He speaks 4 languages.
Ah.
He speaks Spanish, French, English, and Latin. And he's a violin virtuoso. If he were neurotypical, he'd have been all over the news. On the back, NLS stands for No Limit Squad, because nothing stops people with Down syndrome. Let me tell you something. They are resilient. They go for it. Wherever you tell them no, they're going to prove you wrong. They're no limit squad. There's no limit to what someone with Down syndrome can accomplish in this life if they're allowed to just go for it, right?
Yes.
The diamond is the most resilient, it's the strongest rock, right? And so I think of people with Down syndrome who just have strength. Incredible, incredible strength. The yellow and the blue, that's the color for Down syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have the 3 arrow tips is for the lucky few. We are. one in every 600 has Down syndrome, right? 699, 700. One in every 700 kid. And that arrow always goes up because we're always on an upward trajectory.
Yes.
And so there are a lot of symbolism, and that's Anushka seeing the superhero in herself.
Ah.
And all of us has a superhero within ourselves, including people with Down syndrome. They see themselves as powerful. They see themselves as strong. They see themselves as people who can motivate others, inspire others, if only the world would see them in that light, as opposed to these, you know, mild-mannered, sweet, never angry. If you see her throwing a tantrum, you'd be scared.
Mm.
It's rare, but she does. And the oval, you know, represents life, right? The zest for life. Oval represents rebirth. I was reborn when Anushka was born, and I had a new purpose, right? Which is to bring stories of people like this, you know, to life, right?
Yes.
So the book starts with a quote at the top, right, of the person that's being featured. So in this case, this is Chris Nisick, first person with Down syndrome to actually complete a Ironman triathlon.
Gosh.
And his quote is, don't give up. Don't ever give up. It's easy to make excuses and quit. I don't do excuses and I don't quit because my dream is bigger than my pain. Mm. We as actors, we always have to believe that what we want to accomplish is going to take time. And in that time is going to be pain, rejection, you know, being told no and all that stuff, not being able to make a rent and all that. Mm. But when you make it, you will forget that day's at childbirth.
Yeah.
But that baby pop out here, you ain't even thinking about that because the memory of your child is just, whew. Then it tells about his life where he was born, all the circumstances Pharaoh went through. In his case, he had about what? He had had open heart surgery by 5 months. He couldn't walk till he was 4. He managed triathlon.
Wow. Okay.
And then it ends with 3 best things people would want to achieve in life. Adults, children. It says, Chris is one of the best things to be in the world. Steadfast, consistent, and philosophical. Mm. He always has a saying. His saying is that he has to get 1% better each time. And that's how we got through practicing running, practicing his bicycle, and practicing swimming. The 3 things you need to accomplish to be in an Ironman triathlon thing. And for someone who didn't walk till they were 4, who had had 4 major ear operations because they struggled with balance, where his father had thought, this kid is just going to be on this couch forever. He started at 18 to get himself together, to get off the couch. So if this was an average person who had gone through, all these challenges, it'd be all over the place. It'd be all over the news. So many of them. You know who's in here? Jamie Foxx's sister is in this book as well. So many of these people are so amazing. But I have to say this. While these young people are inspirations for my daughter, their parents are inspirations for me. Yeah. So I think to myself, if you can get your child to do all this, yes, Lord, I got plans for mine. And no matter what I've been told, you got to just let that thing slick off of you. Because if you absorb some of the negative, some people are looking for a receptacle for their negative thoughts. They look for somebody to pour their crap into, and you cannot walk around being an open receptacle for every nonsense out here.
Right.
You got to be like, in here, that's why there's a hole on this side, and get it out of you. You cannot give it soil to grow. You got to let that fall on the rock pavement. And drivel up and die.
Yes.
Under your positive.
It'll weigh you down. It'll take you down.
Let it die on the light of your positive shine. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Okay, so before you get out of here, because I know Anushka is hungry and we've been on here for a while. I do
You know me and you could sit to the chat, honey.
Yes.
You know we can.
Absolutely.
Me and you, I love a friend that, yes, we could talk about the Kardashians and their foolishness and what all's go, you know, Kanye West and Bianca Censori walking around with no clothes on and shoes. She got no clothes on, no shoes. He looked like he need a good grease down. First of all, wash up and a grease down and take off all them dusty black clothes. You make too much money to be walking out here looking crazy. And then we could talk about, you know, Trumpy and the economy, and we could talk about social issues. I'm absolutely in love. I love talking. Yes. I like friends that I can, you know, we could talk religion.
Talk
we could
gamut.
Talk music. We could, yes. You know, well-rounded, baby.
Yes, well-rounded. But I do want to ask you.
This computer about to die on me.
Oh, well, okay. So let me hurry. I just wanted to ask you. So like, how did you even get in contact with all these people to be able to add them to the book?
I didn't. Yes. You know what? No, I'm telling you this. I was looking these people up when Anushka was born. I had Anushka's IG account, and what I was doing was, you unplugged it.
We almost lost you.
Yeah. Oh, we was not letting that happen. So when I had Anushka as IG, I was already like, you know, starting, Monday I would do men, and Wednesday I would do women. So I was just, yes, baby, you can sit down with me. Yes, you can sit down with me any time of the week. She's sitting with me. Wherever I am, this child, I could be in the bathroom. She will bring all her stuff, her writing pad, her coloring pad, and sit right there. I'm like, girl. Yeah, she don't understand privacy.
Oh, guys.
She don't understand privacy.
I love it. She must be close to her mommy.
Able, baby.
No, but I love that. You use resources that were available to you.
You know, posting. Yeah. I would do men, women, blah, blah, blah. So this book, what's going to happen? It was. Because I had already kind of laid that groundwork. And I tell you, I didn't even think about that. It was like when the book happened, I was like, you know, I was already doing this. If one were to go onto Anushka's IG and go way back to 2019, 2020, yes, I know, 2019, 2020, you would see where I had already been posting about some of these people. And then, you know, I watched the show. And so this was somewhere in the universe going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was.
So one other question based on that. And the reason why I'm asking you this is because with the podcast, I like to highlight people's journeys, obviously, and the things that they're doing and also like how they put the pieces together, which is why I wanted to ask you that. Yeah. So was there an issue with like licensing or copywriting, like, you know, including them in the book?
Without... No, I spoke to a lawyer, obviously. She's so funny. Yes.
Like, how does that work? For listeners who are creators.
I spoke to a lawyer, and he said to me, as long as the stories you're telling are stuff that's already in public forum, you're not using their actual picture, because if that's the case, nobody would be on the streets doing caricatures, right?
Right.
So it's cartoons, you know, it's a depiction of them, right? But it's not their actual picture.
Got you.
So if I was using their actual imaging, then yes, I would have had to receive their permission and all that. But because it's a cartoon and because everything written here is nothing that is not accessible by anybody. Some of it were interviews. I got quotes from their interviews online with other people, magazine interviews, newspaper interviews, or actual quotes from them on YouTube, you know, and things like that. So there's nothing I'm writing here that was not said by them, said by a parent, you know, and things. So, when I spoke to my friend, they were like, yeah, you wouldn't have any issues unless you're writing something that is not true or that they told you in confidence or whatever, you know, nothing I said here is not on Wikipedia. It's on Wikipedia. Some of it I got from the Global Down Syndrome website, National Down Syndrome website, all of that. So
I've made it easier for people. You've compiled these stories for parents or for people who are interested in learning more about.
I wish there had been a book like this. But when maybe I wouldn't have been as depressed as I was, you know. Yeah, that is your book.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, my book. Yeah, you can have it. It's your book.
One thing I want to do is if I
had a book like that, I think maybe I wouldn't have been as down as I was, because I would have seen such a positive depiction of people, you know, that are living with the extra chromosome that are doing amazing things. You know, I want this book to counteract this stuff. It is Anushka. She saw herself. That's Anushka. I need this book to counteract. That's why I also wanted the book to be bright and bold in color and rich in color, because I wanted it to be the opposite of what you read when you go online and put Down syndrome. It's all of what they cannot do, never juxtaposition to what they can do. So I'm hoping that this starts a more positive dialogue. I want a doctor, when you are telling this woman that their child is going to have Down syndrome, try to keep your own negative outlook out of it. Maybe that woman would be fine with her child having Down syndrome, but you come in there with your somberness and it is Anushka. Yes. You come in there with the somberness and the, like, you're delivering like life ending news. Like you're telling somebody to have cancer. So it's just, you know, doctors can help a lot with being a little bit more positive. Like I said, when I had my kid, this doctor sauntered in, hand in pocket, stood over, not even like come in and go, are you okay, miss? You know, like check with me. How are you feeling? Are you okay? Good. You know, your surgery went well. So I do want to let you know that your daughter does have Down syndrome. Are you aware? Not this. Yeah. Oh, for crying out loud. I was so miserable through my pregnancy because of it was just so heavy on me. You know, how negative everything was, that I spent so much of my time praying. And I mean, it was a church service in my house every day before I left the house. And during my day, if I wasn't talking to somebody, I was whispering a prayer. At the end of the day, before I went to bed, it was anointing the belly and da da da, because it was just like, oh, your life is over. Your life is over. Nothing, you know. We went to Mexico when we travel, we go to restaurants. She is more well-behaved in restaurants than average kids, wanting to run around to hug mommy, to sit on mommy, sitting in a chair with their legs. Anushka sits, she takes a napkin, she puts it on her lap. She's not playing with utensils, because I taught her that. The one thing all her teachers and people say is that she is polite. She knows please and thank you and may I and all of that stuff, you know. And I wonder, and people go, oh my God, and they act like it's such a surprise. She's so polite. Why shouldn't she be?
Right.
But you have an implicit bias that because she has Down syndrome, she couldn't possibly learn how to say please, thank you, may I? Really?
Yes.
Some of your kids that are quote unquote neurotypical and average, you got to pull teeth to say hello when they come in a room.
Not being average. Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yes.
So one thing I want to do is I want to highlight, I love to highlight all artists. Okay. So we want to highlight the illustrator, who is Oliver Chris.
Oliver!
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Am I saying the name? Oliver Chris Bundock?
Oliver. Yes. Perfect. Let me tell you, this boy went into my head. Like some of the stuff, my crude description and... Oh, man. He went in and took it and just took it to a whole other level.
Yes. And how did you find Oliver?
Okay. He was meant to be, because I tried other illustrators. I tried other illustrators and they were like, oh, you offering too much money or this, that, and the other. And with him, I found him through the self-publishing school, which is self-published. So Oliver, so when I reached out to him and I explained what I wanted, you know what brought him on board? Because it was the Down syndrome angle to it. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh my God, this, I want to do this.
Meaningful work.
Yeah. Like African, you know, Caribbean people, if you're not born with two perfect eyes, two perfect everything, it's like, ooh. So it excited him to work on this, because in the Philippines, where he's from, folks like my daughter, you know, it's a kind of ways they people look at them or respond to them or speak to them, address them and such. Same thing in Nigeria, where I'm from, it's become a little bit of a ways, but autism, or like I said, if you weren't born with two everything, like all your stuff all in order, it's a, you know, a raise of the eyebrow and a, you know, sort of thing. And there are no resources usually to help folks like that. Even in this country, you got to fight for the resources that are here, you know. So not to talk about a place like Haiti or, you know, Guatemala and places like that. But he wanted to come on board because he said, wow, you've exposed me to something I wouldn't normally have been exposed to, or that in my community is not looked upon with love and affection or with care, concern, respect, and value. So for that, he wanted to come on board. And for that, he even offered me more than, I thought he was just going to illustrate. He was like, nah, I'm going to format it for you. Let me tell you, that young man came through for me. Never would I email him and he would, you know, another person took my money and never gave me, you know, gave me the work. And then when I came back with notes, they never came back to respond. Oh. And that's been almost 2 years now.
Wow.
And then another girl, you know, never got back to me. So all of it was meant to be. And I love that he came at it with the same passion that I had to make sure that this came out well done.
Yeah. Wow. I love it. Okay. So where can everyone get this book?
Well, yes, child. We got to the money part. Ha, 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 ching, ching, woo, woo. So Ingram Sparks, Barnes & Nobles has it. Yeah. Woo-hoo-hoo. Ingram Sparks, Barnes & Nobles. Barnes & Nobles has it. Amazon has it. And your sister has been doing the legwork of getting it into independent bookstores. So if you are in Bridgeport, Connecticut, Kindred Thoughts, a Black-owned and operated bookstore, is now carrying Anushka's Extraordinary Heroes on their shelves. So I am doing the legwork of going to independent bookstores because I feel like we no longer have an option except this Amazon, you know, like conglomerates. And I miss the mom and pop, you know, places that you can go and find not your popular books, that you can go to like a Kindred Thoughts and find Black authors writing about things that are particular to us, you know, not to knock anybody else's concern, but we all have our peculiarities, right? And stuff that concern us. So Black Thought has it, Kindred Thoughts has the book. So those are three possible avenues, but let me be done. I'll go find every independent bookstore that's open and willing to have it, we'll have it.
Okay. And where can people find you? Find out more about your story, follow along your journey, keep up with your updates.
So I am on IG under EB Bassey Act, EB Bassey Act. And Anushka has her own Life with Anushka. We post all our shenanigans on there. And I'm on TikTok, but yeah, the TikTok, I just started with the TikToking.
Okay.
But IG is my, you know, IG, Facebook are my primary ways that I post. And I post about book signings and readings that are coming up on 21st of March. That's World Down Syndrome,
yes.
Day, 3, 2, 1, 21st chromosome, 3 times, right? So I'm going to be at Angel of Harlem, a restaurant.
Oh.
Bless you, lovey.
Bless you, Anushka.
Yeah, in Harlem. And I'm going to be there from 5 to 7 on Thursday. I'm going to have books to be purchased. I'm going to sign. If you bought a book before, bring it. We'll sign it. Or you can, you know, if you don't have one, you can purchase one. Or just come and say hi and have a drink with me. And in Westport out here in Connecticut on the 24th, I'm having a book reading at this place called The Forge. They only hire people with special needs to work and do the baking and the serving in their restaurant and bakery. So they're having a book reading there, and we're going to have an ice cream social afterwards. I feel like I should have a parasol. So that's going to be in Westport, Connecticut on the 24th. From 2:30 to 3:30.
Oh, I love that. So my gosh.
Yeah, sister girl, I am trying to be out here with this word. And I'm like, listen, Tamron Hall, call a girl. Yes. Jaha, Drew, Sherry, like y'all need to have me on your stage because trust and believe a girl will bring it to you live.
Yes.
And she'll bring the book. And we can educate some folks about some of our extraordinary friends that live right next door to you. Just say hi. Don't stare.
And just to reiterate, March 21st is World Down Syndrome Day. And this episode is going to go live on that day. And we want to send a special early birthday to Anushka because she'll be six the following day
on
March 22nd. So we want to send early birthday to her.
Yes.
So, Evie, thank you so much. Thank you, Anushka.
Running my mouth, girl. Running my mouth and educating. Listen, you got to do both.
You Oh, okay. We got shade. We got education. We got information. Okay. Yes. And educate. Like, we got it all. We got it all. Okay.
I was close. That's Club's favorite show. Okay. So, are you going to say bye, Auntie?
Bye.
Bye, Addie. I just got, she said happy birthday. So thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This has been a So Mind Boggling production. Follow along at So Mind Boggling on Instagram and Facebook.